We have had the opportunity all through the morning to talk a little bit and make reference to this weekend and the marvelous coincidence, or perhaps not coincidence, of the Torah reading about the Exodus and the celebration of Martin Luther King Day and the commemoration of some of the sad and ultimately triumphant events of the Civil Rights Movement. As some of you know, last night we had a service in celebration of Martin Luther King Day, and we had there a gospel choir who sang very beautifully and ended the evening with all the young people in Friday Night Live who came afterwards to hear them sing some more by gathering around in a circle and holding hands and singing We Shall Overcome. It was a very beautiful moment. And as they were leaving, the head of the choir said to me, I just want you to know that Friday Night Live rocks. But it was, of course, something that would have been inconceivable not so long ago. And this is a morning before I talk about a little bit more about movements for liberation, ancient and modern, to celebrate, and we will return to this in just a few moments, the laudatory part, the praiseworthy part, that most of the Jewish community in America, although not all, played in the civil rights movement. And this was, I think, partly a legacy of our own tradition. Michael Walzer, the sociologist and political philosopher, wrote a very little book some 15, 20 years ago called Exodus and Revolution. And in that book, he shows how for almost every revolutionary movement in the Western world, both those that we would applaud and those that we perhaps wouldn't be so happy about, they have used the image of slavery in Egypt and liberation from slavery as a paradigm, as an example of what it is they are seeking. Because here, as we read this morning, at the very outset of the Jewish journey, complete with plagues of darkness, complete with hundreds of years of slavery, because remember, the liberation happened after hundreds of years in Egypt. All of those things in the biblical story let us know that this struggle is a constant struggle in the world, and that despite the fact that on this weekend we celebrate the civil rights movement in America, it is not as though slavery, both literally and metaphorically, no longer exists in the world. There is slavery in the world in a quite literal sense, and there is certainly enslavement, both of people enslaving themselves, and in ways subtle and cruel, enslaving one another. And so part of what we realize is that every celebration of liberation is a celebration of liberation for the moment, and not, at least not yet, of any sort of final liberation. And now it is worth turning our attention for a moment to what it is that we can learn and what it is we should remember about Reverend King, because, as I remarked last night, in synagogue. Somebody who has the title of both doctor and reverend should be referred to as reverend. And also what we can learn about the civil rights movement in general. The first thing that must strike anybody coming from our tradition is that although there were marches and although there were protests, this was a movement that was won by words. If you come up to 90% of the American population, and this is a statistic with absolutely nothing backing it other than my guess at the moment, and say to them, "What do you remember about Martin Luther King?" They will say, "I have a dream." Not his imprisonment, not the marches, not his careful plotting with his sort of kitchen cabinet of the strategy of the civil rights movement, because, like any leader, Martin Luther King spent a lot of time in meetings. It is that speech, because the power of his words, more than anything else, were what rolled over the opposition in America. And that is a message which resonates in the Jewish heart. This is a tradition in which the world is created by words. A tradition in which, as I explained to the chorale last night, and there were some 20 members of the chorale, and they apologized to us afterwards. They said, "Look, usually we have at least three times this number, but it is Martin Luther King weekend, and we got a lot of requests, so we had to divvy ourselves up." But I had them all turn around before the service began, and I explained the ark and the eternal light, and I opened one of the Torah scrolls so they could see it, and I said, "In our tradition, the focus of the sanctuary is on words. Every synagogue in the world that you go to is designed in some way so that your eye is drawn toward the word. That is what is intangible and what is eternal. Moses did many things, but what remains from Moses are the words." And so, that Reverend King is remembered primarily for his words is something that we understand. And that's why, this morning, what I want to do is to read you the words of two people, a rabbi and then of Martin Luther King. They're both very short, but they summarize, they epitomize both what that struggle was about, and for that matter continues to be about, and also the way in which a religious outlook influences those who led the struggle. Because I would remind you, without stepping into too difficult of a minefield, that while it is true that there is a separation of church and state in America, and thank God for it, and it is probably why America has such a vital religious life, it is also true that you cannot extract somebody's deepest beliefs from their political expression. You couldn't in the civil rights movement, and you cannot today. And when somebody says, "My religious beliefs lead me to this position," what they're saying is, what I hold dearest as a human being convinces me that this is right. And as long as there is faith in the world, many people will express themselves that way, and you can put a wall that is legal between church and state, but you cannot slice up souls so that people have a political self and a religious self. And that's why it seems to me particularly appropriate to read the words of a rabbi and the words of a reverend on this Shabbat. There were two rabbis, among many others, who were probably the most prominent in the civil rights movement in the early 60s. The first was Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. If you ever see pictures of the march on Selma and you wonder who is that guy with a long white beard and flowing white hair who looks vaguely prophetic, arm in arm with Martin Luther King, that's Heschel. And after that march, when Heschel came back to the Jewish Theological Seminary, he told his students, "I felt as though my feet were praying." But there was another rabbi who died, in fact, just, I believe, 2 years ago, who was at least equally prominent. And his name was Joachim Prince. Joachim Prince was born in Berlin, and he grew up in Germany. And as a young rabbi, he began to speak out against Hitler in the early 30s. And he became famous in Germany for his eloquence and his dynamism and his courage. And thank God for Rabbi Prince and for us, he and his family were expelled from Germany in 1937. He just escaped because he was forced to escape. And he came to the United States. And when the civil rights movement began, Rabbi Prince, as you might expect, was struck by the similarity between what he had experienced and what he saw now. He was not only an eloquent speaker, but the president of the American Jewish Congress, or the committee rather, the American Jewish Committee, when the civil rights movement began. As a result, he led sit-ins, he walked in picket lines and demonstrations, became one of the founding chairmen of the civil rights movement on Washington, and was very close to Reverend King until Reverend King's assassination. He gave a speech in 1963, in August, in the March on Washington. It's called, "I Speak to You as an American Jew." And I want to read you the concluding three paragraphs of his speech. He said, "When I was rabbi of the Jewish community in Berlin under the Hitler regime, I learned many things. The most important thing that I learned under those tragic circumstances were that bigotry and hatred are not the most urgent problem. The most urgent, the most disgraceful, the most shameful and tragic problem is silence. A great people, which had created a great civilization, had become a nation of silent onlookers. They remained silent in the face of hate, in the face of brutality, and in the face of mass murder. America must not become a nation of onlookers. America must not become silent. Not merely black America, but all of America. It must speak up and act from the president down to the humblest of us, and not for the sake of the Negro, not for the sake of the black community, but for the sake of the image, the idea, and the aspiration of America itself." And let me conclude with the words of Reverend King, who, of course, in our community, we revere not only for what he did for America, but also for his close, loving, and outspoken ties to the Jewish community and to the State of Israel. And so, let me close by quoting to you from one of his speeches. These were the final words. If we continue to worship at the pagan shrine of racism or totalitarianism of any color, we shall never forge a stable, enduring, and just society. Our hearts and minds must be redirected to the hills where the hope and promise of a redeemed humanity was born. In the words of the prophet Isaiah, "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." Ken Yehi Ratzon, so may it be God's will. Amen.